Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you that views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And ordinarily, of course, we would have a guest tonight, but this gentleman who we're supposed to actually have as a guest he's an expert on disappearing, how you can actually live with another identity and how nobody can track you down. And when we tried to call him tonight, even though he'd agreed to do the program, I guess he's also disappeared. So, if you're out there in the listening audience and you'd like to call us, we'd be glad to talk to you, whatever the subject would be, because I have nothing prepared. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. I'd like to know, well, let's ask some questions. First of all, how do you feel about Iran? Do you think we are going to war with Iran? Why would we go to war with Iran? Could this be a very, very simple, a little war with perhaps minimal casualties, simply taking out Iran's nuclear production capacity, or could this develop into something more serious? Or will it be that the president, recognizing the fact that the current war in the Middle East is very, very unpopular, that they'll go ahead and they'll pull our troops out? The Democrats will fund the current war for another couple of months and then we'll pull back. What do you think should be done? Should we wave the right flag of surrender and lose again like we did in Vietnam? What is the proper position we should take? Certainly in the recent debates, all of the Republican candidates but Ron Paul supported the president's war effort. Some of them even wanted to increase the number of troops, as John McCain did. And John McCain has said that even if he was the last man standing, he would continue supporting the war. And certainly they were very, very critical of Ron Paul, Congressman Ron Paul, for suggesting that we should pull out of Iraq and pull our troops out of Afghanistan and Iraq. If you're out there in the listening audience, give us a call. 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295. I'd like to know what you think about what's going on over there. Do we owe the people of Iraq the opportunity to have a stable country before we leave? After all, it was a stable country when we went in, whether we liked Saddam Hussein or not. If we pull out, will there truly be violence? If we pull out, will the terrorists follow us home here? What should we be doing? Well, give us a call, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. I'd very much like to know what you think and why you think that way. And here's an opportunity to have people all across the world know what you think about what's going on in the Middle East, and whether we were justified in going in, and even if we weren't justified in going in, once we're in a situation such as we are today, wouldn't we be simply ignoring the sacrifice made by all the young men and women who've gone over there and fought and bled and suffered and died by turning tail and leaving? Don't we owe them the obligation to complete this war? Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295, and we'll be talking to Jack from Michigan as soon as we get back. All right, Jack, tell us what you think about the war and what we should do. Jack, are you there?
Yes, I am, Dr. Stan. Can you hear me?
I can. You're coming through loud and clear.
Yeah, great. You are, too. Well, I agree with Ron Paul, and a thought entered relative to Sodom and Gomorrah. I kind of liken Washington, D.C., as Bull Gripe did, the District of Corruption. I think all those people who voted for the Patriot Act voted, delegated away their constitutionally mandated fiduciary duty for declaring a mandated war to the president, which, if I'm not mistaken, he did by executive order.
Actually, he was given permission by Congress if he felt that this was necessary to go ahead and
but that doesn't absolve them of their fiduciary duty for that duty. That's a constitutionally mandated responsibility, just like the gold and silver monetary system. It should not reauthorize the Federal Reserve Act, but every so many years, right, they continually do. So I say pull out, just tell it like I've seen it on documentary videos. These were perverse, colossal lies. They fabricate, like William Odom, you said, in Fixing Intelligence, although it wasn't specifically addressing this situation, but look at how history has repeated itself over and over again. This is the new Vietnam. So the American people and the Iraqi people want us out of there. And just like when Ron Paul debated in that first week of debate, I heard a guy, let's see, he was filling in for Michael Savage, Douglas Urbanski. And good old Dougie Urbanski stated that Ron Paul should have been pulled from the debate, because he's a non-candidate. He doesn't know what he's talking about. So anyway, that's what I think. Pull all the troops out. Bring them home. We don't want any more murdered. The Iraqi people, the Muslims, I think no, they know...
Hold on, thought. We'll be back in just a moment here with Jack from Michigan. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and unfortunately our regularly scheduled guest has written a book on privacy and how to disappear, and he disappeared tonight. Left no forwarding telephone number, wasn't where he was supposed to be, and so unfortunately we're not going to be able to have him as a guest, so we thought maybe we would get your views on what's going on in the Middle East and whether or not you felt we should have gone in the first place. Now that we're there, should we stay there? I said to you, what about the sacrifice that our fighting men and women have made so far? And said to you, what about all the money we've spent? Well, wouldn't this, of course, be a sign of weakness? Wouldn't this invite more attacks on us? Will the terrorists follow us home from Iraq, feeling now that we're weakened and we do not have the resolve? Was Osama bin Laden right when he said America did not have the resolve or the staying power, and we would cut and run? So Jack is saying he thinks that we should pull out, and he's simply quoting Congressman Ron Paul, who in the two debates on both occasions has been asked what he would want to do, and he felt we should pull out. He was the only one of the nine candidates, Republican nominees, who felt that way. All the others, of course, felt we should stay. And so if you're out there, give us a call, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And so, Jack, let me ask you a couple of questions.
Sure.
Do you think that the Muslim world will look upon America's pulling out of the Middle East as a sign of weakness and perhaps begin to raise questions in people's minds throughout the world? Can we really depend upon the United States as an ally?
Yes. Dodgers, Dan, I know these people. This military is an occupying imperialist power. I don't think they're so stupid, gullible, naive as to believe that we're some kind of a world savior or the military. No, these people, they want us out. They want the military out of there. This is a cleverly crafted PSYOP that's been run repeatedly for obvious reasons. As far as all the money that's been pilfered, those companies should be held accountable. They can, like the one that relocated in wherever it was now, Bahrain or wherever, you know, the port, that port debacle. So whichever defense contractor, was it Halliburton or was it, anyway, one of them relocated. They can all come back here and they can pay the medical bills of all the soldiers and the families. They can construct, they can pay for the barrier, border barrier that should be constructed on the southern border, and if necessary on the northern border, whatever. We need to secure our homeland. We don't need homeland security. That's right out of the Third Reich. I believe KGB agents are directing that behind the scenes. This is a golden opportunity for true patriotic Americans to become involved, and that's what I'm going to do here. I'm going to motivate people via petition that we have to force the debate here with our congressmen and senators, and if they don't respond, we're going to have them impeached, etc. And furthermore, as far as that is concerned, that's kind of a segue, serendipitously. Michael Shaw was on last week, and in the past, Michael Shaw had a fellow on by the name of Gary Robinson of Pennsylvania, who identified the fact that the duly elected public servants, I hate to call them servants, I think they're more Ron Paul's about the only servant, all the rest of them are serpents. They're not the lawmakers. It's a star chamber group called the Legislative Service or Draft Bureau, which is comprised exclusively of Bar Esquire attorneys. I checked it out here in Michigan, sure enough. And so there's no separation of powers. There's that's a major conflict of interest. Of course, we can't forget the original 13th Amendment that prohibited titles of nobility being involved in government. We have to get back to fundamentals, and this is what I am focused on, Dr. Stanton.
All right, fine. So then we will put you down as someone that feels we ought to get our troops out of there.
Come on.
And you're not really concerned about the impression that we may be weak, or that that the Al Qaeda, you know, will be following us home, and that we're far better off to fight them on the streets of Baghdad than on the streets of New York.
Well, I'll tell you what. I have the solution if they happen to follow us home. I have a Weimaraner canine cheetah dog, and I think if we all equip ourselves with Weimaraner canine cheetah dogs, I don't think these Al-Qaeda or Taliban, they aren't going to want to stick around.
All right, fine. Thank you so much for calling, Jack.
Thank you, Dr. Stanton.
Bye-bye. And our telephone number, again, is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And it's sort of an open line situation with nothing at all prepared. So we would welcome your call from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, many people say that Ron Paul should support the position of the Republican Party, even though he doesn't agree with George Bush, but as a member of the Republican Party, he has an obligation, a loyalty to his party that should supersede any other loyalty, and he should support their position. And this is why certain people within the Republican Party have asked that Ron Paul be excluded from future debates, because he's taken a very, very strong position in reference to pulling America's troops out of Iraq and Afghanistan. How do you feel? Do you think Ron Paul is right? Do you think Ron Paul is wrong? Do you think that, we should have gone in the first place? I mean, after all, Saddam Hussein was a ruthless and despicable tyrant. I mean, don't we have an obligation to help people who are being oppressed by somebody like Saddam Hussein, who tortures and kills people? Certainly there's very little question that there were tens of thousands, if not at least 100,000 Kurds who were killed by the use of poison gas and Shias in the southern part of Iraq, who were killed after they actually rose up against Saddam's regime. After the first Gulf War, do we have an obligation to help other oppressed people throughout the world? I'd like to know what you think. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Now, certainly, Jack was talking about Halliburton. Halliburton, it was Halliburton that had moved to Dubai and had transferred its center of operations there. And, there's a certain amount of question about the propriety of much of what Halliburton had done. Many of the no-bid contracts it had received there. And then there's a questionable relationship between Halliburton and the Vice President Dick Cheney, who had been CEO, Chief Operating Operator, or Chief of Halliburton. And then after he came to work as the Vice President, he continued to receive a deferred salary. I'm not quite certain what a deferred salary is, but do you think that a Vice President of the United States should be receiving any sort of a salary, deferred or whatever you would call it, from a defense contractor that is getting a no-bid contract? Does that suggest perhaps a conflict of interest? These are all questions I think that need to be addressed. And then what about the lives of, over 3,000, perhaps 3,400 young men and women have lost their lives already, and that's simply in Iraq. Probably another several hundred have died in Afghanistan. And what are we going to do about Afghanistan? How are we going to restore any sort of normalcy if we pull out? Will there be chaos if we pull out? And I really want to know what you out there in the listening audience feel. Give us a call, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295. And then, of course, the possibility that even though the war is extremely unpopular here at home, and certainly I really believe this is the reason the Republicans lost both the Senate and the House in the last election, President Bush has said that he really doesn't care how the American people feel, how Congress feels, how, of course, the Senate feels. He is the commander-in-chief of our military, and he has to do what he feels is correct as far as, pursuing the war. And apparently, he feels that we need to take out the rest of the axis of evil. So, what would your thoughts be? Do you have any comment on this? Do you think that we should go to war with Iran? Can we allow Iran to get the nuclear weapons? Would Iran be a threat to the peace and stability of the Middle East if Iran did get nuclear weapons? And then, of course, what would happen to Israel if Iran got nuclear weapons? Well, we've got Don calling from Richland, Washington, so we'll be with Don here in just a moment and get his thoughts and questions. But, of course, this is Open Lines, and even though we're not prepared, or nearly when I do an open line, I have a plan what we're going to cover if nothing comes up. I spent all my time reading this book on the privacy crisis, and unfortunately did not have time to prepare anything, so I'm going to have to depend on you. And when we get back, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295. We want to know what you think about the situation, and if you think that we should pull our troops out, or keep our troops there, expand the war, contract the war. We want to know what you think. Well, right now we have Don calling from Richland, Washington. Hi, Don. How are you doing?
Hello, Dr. Stan.
Well, tell us what you think.
Well, first of all,
gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four-tape or a four-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets, a little protects your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927, or go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
You got headaches? Most headaches are caused by a structural weakness of blood vessels in the head, and the blood vessels are tending to balloon, causing a headache. The structural weakness is due to a deficiency. Correct the deficiency and the body will heal itself. I blended what I believed to be the missing nutrients in the right proportions, and the headaches went away. When they were gone, they stayed gone. I named it Headache Stay Gone. See HeadacheStayGone.com or call 800-327-0727 for more information or to place an order. I'll send you a bottle of Headache Stay Gone. Headache Stay Gone will cure your headaches and prevent them from coming back before you pay the bill. Headache Stay Gone has already cured the worst migraines I have ever heard of. Call 800-327-0727. All orders are shipped the same day. Call 800-327-0727. That's 800-327-0727.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Teary. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Can we, like, cover them with air, because of our air superiority on everything?
Well, unfortunately, the way that the thing's developing militarily, John, is that you're really, with supposedly the Iraqis are supposed to be trained to go on in, but you'll have to remember that immediately after we came in, we destroyed the Iraqi army, and so that the this is an entirely new army. It's untrained. It's And, of course, it's divided because, you know, some of the members of the army are Shia and some are Sunni, and the Shias are not going to fight other Shias. Sunnis are not going to fight other Sunnis. And, you know, this is really a situation where people are, you know, they're in homes or in basements or on rooftops, and if we use our superior air power, an awful lot of civilians are going to get killed. So, I mean, it's a very difficult situation. So, but anyway, your solution would be to try to shift the responsibility to the Iraqi army. But to date, why, of course, they have not been able to take over, and a serious question whether they will be able to.
Yeah. Well, I think that we shouldn't put our men in situations where they might not have a chance. And like the ones that were just lost, they go out on, they shouldn't go out in such few numbers where they can be, just slaughtered or overwhelmed. Don't you think if we just monitored the Iraqis and just forced them to do that, that they'd have a advantage if we supported them through our Air Force?
You can't use the Air Force, you know, in cities. You can't target it that closely. That's got great tragedy. It is a very, very difficult situation. I mean, my fear is that this is going to drag on year after year after year. Remember, we have already been fighting in Iraq longer than we fought in World War II.
And, of course,
the same thing is true. We've been in Afghanistan for over 5.5 years. You know, time passes very, very quickly. And I would not say when we're having fun, because this is a terrible tragedy.
Have they had successes, like, in other areas? Is it not, like, just in some real bad general areas that...
Well, first of all, in the Kurdish area in the north, now they have a fairly stable society. But that's because they have all Kurds living there, other than there's a few Arabs and a few Turkmen that are living in a town known as Kirkuk. And that, of course, is... But then the Kurds are trying to drive them out of that region. But, you know, if you take a poll, you'll find most of the Kurds want America to stay. But then we don't have any American troops there because there's no problem. It is in the rest of the country where, of course, 80% of the people live, and where, of course, the Sunnis are, and where the Shias Muslims are, that the chaos exists. And it is literally an impossible situation. This is, of course, what most people really don't want to admit. And I would simply point out to you that we need to learn something from history. Somebody once said, George Bernard Shaw was quoting a philosopher who said, the one thing we learn from history is we never learn anything from history. But if you go back, you'll remember Palestine in 1948, and the Israelis were moving in. They were going to try to establish their homeland.
Their new homeland.
The Arabs didn't want that. They were going to oppose them. And, of course, the British tried to stay there as their moderator for a time. And then after the bombing of the King David Hotel, the British simply packed their bags and pulled out and said, you fight it out. And they did fight it out. And the war was short to the point. And eventually both sides realized that they weren't going to gain anything by continuing. They established a peaceful situation. And the British got out of there, and they were not caught in the middle of a meat grinder. And I think there are some people that might feel that we never should have gone in, but once you're in, you should cut your losses. Anyway, our telephone number is 1-888.
I appreciate it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you so very much for your call. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295. I'd like to know what you think. Should we cut our losses and leave? What would happen to our prestige? We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. We Hale. This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And I'd like to know what you think about what's going on over in Iraq. Should we cut our losses, or should we, and pull out, or should we persist and hope that eventually the Iraqi troops will be able to take over? And of course, this is supposedly what we're doing now. They're saying there shouldn't be certain landmarks. The Iraqis should begin assuming more and more of the responsibility, and if they don't do that, then we would pull out. Do you think that this is a workable solution? Well, of course, there's lots of questions, and we want to know what you actually think about it. And so, if we hear from you at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or at 464-8295, why, we'll be glad to let you have your say, and then at the end of the program, I will let you know what I think about what's going on. 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295. And, of course, the toll of taking on our men, it seems to be growing every single week, and we lose more and more young men and women. But it's not only those, of course, who are killed. It's not even only those who have lost arms and legs, and they certainly will never see or hear again. But it's the fact that after our young men come home, within about 3 months, with about 30% of them have some sort of a chronic illness, and nobody knows why. And the Veterans Administration simply gives them a little pat on the head and says, well, you've got post-traumatic stress, but we've never seen levels of post-traumatic stress like this. This is what they said after the first Gulf War, and many of these people have a chronic autoimmune disease that is truly crippling them. Well, let's, of course, go right now to Scott, calling from Spokane. Hi, Scott. What are your thoughts?
Well, I'm a retiree from the Air Force, and I am all for liberty and pursuit and all that stuff. But I tell you what, to have our young men over there dying for this cause right now, I really don't believe in it because, you know, I mean, I did my 20 years in the service and, you know, got through it all right. But I tell you what, to go over there and to die for this cause over there, which all I see is oil. And that's the only thing that I see that the government's looking at is oil. I just don't agree to have our young men over there.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and it's open lines because our regularly scheduled guest did not show up, and so basically we have Scott calling Spokane. The question we've raised is, what should we do with the war in the Middle East? Should we pull our troops out, or should we leave them there? And of course, Scott is a 20-year veteran, Air Force veteran, and he says he's fought for America, but of course he thinks we ought to pull our troops out. And so let me just ask you a couple of questions, and remember now, when I do this, I'm playing the devil's advocate, so I may or may not agree with what I'm saying. But you know, certainly people are going to say, but this is going to be just like Vietnam all over again. And, you know, you just realize countries throughout the world will realize they can't trust the United States. You know, if things go well, fine, but when they don't go well, why, the Americans turn tail and run. What would you say to that argument?
To turn tail and run, huh? I don't know. Just, you know, the way these folks are dying over there, you know, I mean, it's a coward way of killing people for the first thing, because these bombs that go off and kill these young men. I just think it's a chicken way out. I mean, if you're going to fight a person, fight them eye to eye, you know. And I just do not like what's happening over there right now, and think we ought to be bringing our boys back.
All right, fine. Anything else you'd like to say, Scott?
Excuse me?
Anything else you'd like to say before I let you go?
No, thank you. No, thank you for your time.
God bless. Thanks very much. Well, let's go to Ray calling from Santa Cruz. And again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Over here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And certainly, at least among the people we've talked to this evening, there's not been anybody who wanted to leave our troops there and support the president and support the Republican Party. And certainly, as you know, of the two recent debates we've had, 8 of the 9 Republican candidates for the presidency are fully behind the president and want to keep our troops there. So, Ray, what's your position?
I think it's madness. I think, but this president, I think, is making it impossible for Congress to do anything to stop it. The only way that they can really stop it, I think, is to cut off the funding completely, and but they won't do that. So, I mean, it's just going to keep going on and on and on until people just finally, until the American people finally wake up and look, see the light on this thing. Our economy over here is crumbling. I mean, we've got a very high jobless rate, but the thing, the devil in the details is that the fact that if we bring the troops home now, what are they going to come home to? No jobs. That's another thing too. I'm thinking maybe that's why they don't really want to stop it, because they don't want these young men to come back and to, you know, and they have to make an excuse for the fact that, you know, there's no jobs.
Well, because remember, a lot of these are National Guard troops, and their employers have had to keep their jobs open from a lot of reserve troops, and employers are supposed to keep their jobs open for them. But this is a terrible strain on the employer to keep a job open for a man that he's not even certain he's going to come back or what shape he's going to be in when he does get back. And certainly this is not only a strain as far as just the administration, but a financial strain upon the employer. So I think that your point is well taken. So, I believe that it's going to be very, very difficult, you know, for people back in Washington, D.C. to cut off funding for what's going on, because we're going to be saying, look, are we going to abandon our men if we're going to cut off funds so they're not going to have any funds to defend themselves with? I mean, they're not going to have any ammunition. Yeah. Are we going to leave them there defenseless?
Well, the point is that this president is making it difficult. He's making it hard on the American people. He's making it hard on everybody. He's a madman. I think he's crazy. And, you know, I think the only way to address the issue is to point out the fact that, the war was illegal, you know, wasn't a valid war to begin with. There must be some way that we can withdraw. I keep thinking about Vietnam, you know, and it seemed to me at the time there was a very high energy against the war in Vietnam. I remember that because I've been involved in some protest against the Vietnam War, and I remember that the feeling was very high against the war, you know, when Nixon in 1973, the feeling was that we had to get out of there, you know, as soon as possible. So what do they do? They did pull out, you know, but Nixon was forced to, you know, Nixon wasn't the one that pulled them out, really, because in Vietnam we kind of advocated. And, you know, we got out of there, but it seemed to me like we had to get rid of Nixon first.
Well, because you remember, first, the final evacuation.
Right, the evacuation.
From there, and here you see the helicopters leaving the roof of the embassy and people hanging on to the pontoons, trying to get out, trying to escape. Knowing full well that if they were going to remain behind, if they were Vietnamese, they would either be executed or sent to prison camps. And of course, the people were desperate to get out. But look at what's going on over there, Ray. I mean, there are a lot of people, of course, who actually who supported the United States, who've risked their lives to support us over there. And if we pull out, what's going to happen to them?
Yeah, there's incredible amount of you know, but the thing is, our economy, we can't survive economically with this war continuing for another couple of years. Our economy, the gas prices are going way up. The truckers and the, you know, everybody's being affected by this. You know, and naturally, one of the reasons why the gas prices are going up is because of the war, I think.
I think you're absolutely right. Remember, when George Bush became the president, oil was $18 a barrel. It's pushing to $70 a barrel now. And they're trying to make the American people believe we went over there for oil. We didn't go over there for war oil. We went over there to cut back on oil production to drive the prices up.
Mm-hmm.
Because nothing as it appears to be, and one of the real purposes of what we're doing, one of the real purposes of everything is to drive the price of oil up so we will be forced to get out of our cars and onto our bicycles.
Right, yeah. Well,
and let me tell you, our guest has suddenly shown up, so we're going to go to him. But Ray, I agree with you.
Yeah.
You cut your losses. Now, we're not going to do it. I wish that we were. But we have to utilize this this unrest against the war to point out this whole thing is manipulated, it's orchestrated, and I fear, and of course we'll be having Jack McClam on tomorrow evening, who's got contacts with a lot of people in the military, and they all think we are intent upon going to war with Iran. It doesn't matter what the average person wants. It doesn't matter what Congress wants. Doesn't matter what the scientists, what the Senate wants. Doesn't matter. Really, of course, what the military wants, and the fact that many of them are saying do not go to war with Iran, and some of our admirals and generals are threatening to quit. George Bush, but it's not George Bush. He's simply a front man for the people who are working behind the scenes, and of course, the people who control George Bush intend to take us into a war with Iran.
Yeah.
And I hope, if you haven't had a chance, please read my February 2007 newsletter. It's posted up on the internet, and I think this will give you an entirely different perspective of what is going to happen next and why.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, thanks so much for coming.
Okay,
but for all the others who called, I want to thank them very much.
Okay.
Yeah, I believe Ron Paul is absolutely right.
Yeah.
We should have pulled out a lot. We never should have gone in. And what you do is you pull out and you save as many American lives as you can. And believe me, the Shias and the Sunnis will fight for a time, and then they'll resolve their differences, and there'll be a peace agreement. And if they really wanted to solve the problem, they'd split the country into three parts, one Shia, one Sunni, and one Kurd, divide up the oil revenue, and that would be the end of it. But we don't want a peaceful solution.
We want World War III.
Right.
I mean, certain people want World War III.
Amen to that. Thanks so much, Ray. God bless.
Bye.
All right. Well, let's go, of course, to Grant Hall. And Grant is here. We're going to be talking about his book on the privacy crisis, Identity Theft, Prevention Plan, and Guide to Anonymous Living. Thanks very much for being with us this evening, Grant.
Oh, hello, Dr. Spann. It's indeed a pleasure to be your guest, and I appreciate you having me on. Thank you.
All right. Well, tell us, you apparently have spent a lot of time of your life, actually, perfecting these techniques of how we can live without a specific identity so that we will not be subject to identity theft. What motivated you to write the book?
Oh, a number of years ago, I was confronted by a person who was going to make me into a defendant in the civil court system. And I, at that time, was a younger business person. And my attorney, who I saw in consultation, advised me to just avoid the service of the summons by merely living a very private lifestyle. And up until that time, I had actually practiced a private lifestyle, both in business and in pleasure. But this motivated me to really, really research and do the very best I could possibly do based on the available data and the professionals that I consulted to develop new and more innovative and thorough and workable techniques, and also principles and concepts that are outlined in the book Privacy Crisis. And in fact, I basically lived a very low profile for 4 years and escaped all the private investigators who were looking for me at that time at the advice of my counsel, and basically walked away unscathed from that ordeal, which was a frivolous and meritless lawsuit, according to my attorney.
All right, well, now, certainly one of the points you make is that you should have an alternative identity, in other words, a different name. But how do you get those identity documents? You talk about going up on the Internet, but many times, of course, this is not, they do not follow through. How could you get an identity document in another name? And then, of course, the point you make is that if you're dealing with the government, you can't utilize that. You have to use an honest document living with the government. So, but where can you get alternative documents? Are there other countries that will issue them?
In some cases, there are other countries that will issue them, but the purpose of having an alternate identity is not to deceive anybody when official business is done. The purpose of an alternate identity to maintain and keep your privacy, to avoid identity theft, and to avoid life-threatening intrusions by stalkers, even government. So the point is to live a private lifestyle and use an alternate identification as needed in terms of your name when you do ordinary business that is nobody else's business. When you do talk to policemen and government officials, you want to use your true identity. They have a right to know that, and so don't misinterpret what my book and my concepts are. In terms of alternate identification documents, yes, privacy seekers do use those. However, they're for privacy purposes if you're doing them as, using them as a law-abiding citizen. Unless you've actually been issued official documents. In the case of ordinary alternate identification, those are pseudo-documents or issued by private sources and only to be used for privacy purposes, not to deceive anybody of an official nature and not to break any laws, but only to use them as a privacy tool.
Well, because one of the things we run into now is so much of everything we do is done with Visa card and MasterCards. Can you get a Visa or MasterCard in your alternative name? And is that a legal thing to do?
Yes, in certain cases you can get those in an alternate name. You just have to keep your eyes open and see what's available. But above all, it's not necessary to break any laws. In the event that you have trouble finding those in your alternate name, a very good and close second to that is simply to have the Visa card or a debit card. A debit card is preferable because it is not traced through the credit bureaus, and it's not a credit line. Therefore, it's private between only yourself and the bank. But a very close second to having it in an alternate name is to have it in a company name, and when it's issued correctly, only you and the institution are aware of who is really the signer behind the card. For example, Dr. Stan could have his Visa card issued in the XYZ Trust, and on the card it would just say the XYZ Trust, and you could use the card for purchases that are necessary, and in that case, only yourself and the institution that issued the card would be aware of who is really the signer, and hotels and people that you used in your traveling or in your purchases, your confidential purchases, would not be aware of who the XYZ Trust is or who the trustee and signer is.
Well, now, of course, the thing is that when you put your money into trust, you have to have somebody to trust. And can you really trust people with your... You know, I've known people put things into trust, and the trustees, made off with everything they had.
Well, the grantor, in the case I just outlined, if Dr. Stan was the grantor, in other words, if he funded the trust, he could also be the trustee of a simple trust account, whereas it's a checking account held at a financial institution. It could be as private as you would need it to be, and whatever property you would hold in that, besides the checking account, for example, in my outline, is up to you, and it's also up to what you decide based on your advice from your advisor. But in the case I just outlined, You can have the trust hold your checking account, and you can have a Visa card issued to the trust in the trust name only. Be very careful and only have that name on the card and only have the trust account name on the statement.
Well, before getting a little short on time, would you like to get your, do you have a place where people can get your book? How would they get a copy of your book?
Sure, you can go to border stores, ask any bookstore, it's available, ask Amazon. You can go to Amazon.com or you can go to privacycrisis.com and you can get it any of those places. And it's available at all stores now.
All right, fine. And so are you having fairly good luck in getting the book out?
Well, it's been on Amazon for just a very few months, and it's only behind one other privacy book at this point.
All right,
and
hold that thought.
Quite
back.
Well.
We'll be back in just a moment. Well, our guest is Grant Hall. We're talking about his book, Privacy Crisis, Identity Theft, Prevention Plans, and Guides to Anonymous Living. Well, you know, one of the things that really disturbs me today, this increasing desire of government to want to monitor everything we do. And we know that the government monitors many telephone calls without, without warrants, and they've been doing this for many years through Echelon and other techniques. And so, you know, in an increasingly hostile state where there's a tremendous hostility between those of us who want to be free and not monitored and government officials who want to know everything that everybody's thinking and doing, how does that influence, of course, what you're writing about? Because you were really writing about a logical society when men were free, and yet we're moving rapidly away from that towards a society where everything is monitored from the cradle to the grave.
Yes, it would seem that way if you listen to the newscasters. However, America has always been a free people, and I believe that today we have the greatest opportunity in history to make our lives private. And that's because there's entrepreneurs and innovators that continuously develop new software, write books, and provide services that enable people to have their lives be as private as is necessary. For example, the phone that I'm talking on is not registered to anybody. There's no bills that go to this. You can walk into any department store and pick it up. It's called Net10. It's a cell phone. There is a facility that's mentioned in the book that is only available to people who do not give their names. It is totally private, and you can do absolutely total and private and confidential banking without giving your name or your Social Security number or providing any identification. It's done with an iris eye scan. It's called 24/7 Private Vaults, and it's in Las Vegas, Nevada. That's mentioned in the book. It's possible to absolutely make your life as private as you need to make it. There's software that enable you to keep your computer totally private. The list goes on and on and on. And these products and services are developed by people to serve a free people, because there is a portion of us that will always want our lives private.
Well, I'm certain there are, and I hope and pray that we will be able to maintain at least some degree of privacy, but we're just going to have to wait and see what happens when, and I don't think it's a matter of if, but when we go to war with Iran and then with the Muslim world. Well, we're just about out of time. Grant, thank you so very much. I'm sorry we didn't have more time to spend with you, but I've really enjoyed it. It's a very interesting book and very thought-provoking.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I appreciate your having me on.
Bye-bye. Okay.
Bye.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. And, of course, this is the time when we need to remind all of our listeners that Radio Liberty is listener-supported. And we do hope that many of you will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters. And, of course, you can do that by giving us a call at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. And it was very interesting this evening. Every single one of the callers to this program wanted to get our troops out of the Middle East, and I certainly agree with that position totally. I don't think it's going to happen, but I agree with it, and I think we need to let people know why we're there. All of the reasons that are given really are incorrect. We're not there for oil. We're not there for Israel. We are certainly not there, you know, for the other reasons that are given. We are there because this is, I believe, a stepping stone to World War III, and I believe that there are powerful spiritual forces that are moving us in that direction. And as I mentioned to Ray, get my February 2007 newsletter and read it through several times and copy it and help us to get the information out. Until people recognize the spiritual forces that are driving us towards this terrible, terrible war that lies ahead, I don't think that, of course, anybody is going to really be able to understand that what we are doing is seeing a preparation for God's judgment coming on America. But this may be the best thing, because if there isn't, something doesn't happen, why we're going to continue this death spiral we're involved in. And I hope that sometime it may be a very merciful thing for God, of course, to bring his judgment on this nation for a time until the people have truly repented. Because that is the only hope we have, is a massive revival in America. Well, under any circumstances, you really need to get my material. I would suggest my talk on The Forbidden Secret. That is a DVD. We have a four-tape set called The Secret, Behind the Secret. And this, of course, takes you into the secret that Rhonda Byrne talks about, which is basically the same secret that I talk about. It's the same secret that has been passed down for thousands of years to the mystery religions, and you'll be fascinated by the four tape or four CD set, The Secret, Behind the Secret. Certainly we hope that you'll want to get the other videos by Chris Pitto, The Secret Mysteries of America's Development, or America's Beginnings, I should say. His video, Riddles in Stone, The Secret Architecture of Our Nation's Capital, and the Megiddo of is Megiddo anyway. It's one and two. They're full length DVDs, but very, very informative. And then, of course, we hope that you'll want to get Joe Schimmel's videos or DVDs. They sold their souls for rock and roll, the 3 hour, the 4 hour, the 10 hour version. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, 10-hour version. I promise you it'll be an unforgettable experience. But even the 3-hour version is excellent. But you've really got to be dedicated to watch the 10-hour, and yet I've never known anybody who's watched that 10-hour who's not thought it was the best 10 hours they ever spent. Because you really begin to understand the true nature of the spiritual battle in which we're involved. You can join the Radio Liberty family of supporters by calling us at 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like, of course, to get a food catalog, we'll be glad to send it to you. And ladies and gentlemen, begin making your preparations. Don't put it off. If you need the health products, lay in a good supply of them so you'll have them on hand, because your health is going to be so important in the difficult times that lay ahead. And then start thinking about how you're going to be able to look after yourself and your family. We have some excellent books. One of them is called Making the Best of Basics, how you get along when all the things aren't there on the shelves there at the local grocery store, and when you've got to begin to start fending for yourself. So please pray for America, pray for revival, pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927, our webpage, RadioLiberty.com. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you that the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us this evening a very special guest and an old friend, Ed Griffin. Hi, Ed. How are you doing?
Good, Dr. Stan. How are you doing?
Doing fine. And we heard Ed give a talk just over the weekend there in Southern California. And, of course, he's going to be speaking at the Conspiracy Conference this weekend. It's going to be held over there in Santa Clara. If you need the telephone number on that, why, we can get it for you. But, of course, you can go to conspiracycon.com, or you can call the Conspiracy Conference at 209-832-0999. That's 209-832-0999. And as I told Ed, you're going to see an awful lot of weird people there, but there has to be a Christian presence. When we don't involve and aren't involved in things like this, why, we lose by default. And so we go every year, and we will have a table there, and Steve will be with me, and just pray for us, please. But we really need to be there to represent a testimony, a living testimony for our Lord. Under any circumstances, I'd ask Ed if he could come on this evening and talk about what he had talked about at the meeting this weekend, and that is, of course, the Professor Carol Quigley's view of our electoral process. So I'm going to stand back and let Ed pick up the ball. Go ahead, Ed. I thought your presentation was excellent.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Stan. And I feel a little bit out of place here because, you know, if there's anybody who is an expert on Professor Quigley, Carol Quigley, it's you. I mean, I can't think of anybody that has spent more time in gathering more original resources on that topic than you, and I'm pretty sure that your audience, at least your regular listeners, are very familiar with the story. But what I was talking about last Saturday for the UROC meeting, that's the United Republicans of California, was a little side view of what Quigley talked about, perhaps. Listeners may not be so familiar with that part of it.
You go right ahead. I'm sure
the issue. Yes. Well, the issue here, you know, Quigley talks about a secret society. He is actually the unofficial historian of a secret society that was created by Cecil Rhodes many, many years ago. Rhodes, of course, was one of the wealthiest men in the world in London. He was born in England, but he spent much of his life in South Africa. And he was the chancellor there in charge of the whole South African colonial development. And he had amassed a tremendous fortune through the gold and diamond resources of South Africa. And I was just reviewing that history for the audience, and the fact that he was one of the wealthiest men in the world is fairly well known. They recognize that he is the guy that created the Rhodes Scholarship. And so many of our American leaders and leaders from around the world are Rhodes Scholars, and that seems, well, that's nice that somebody left money so that they could send these nice boys to school. But what they don't realize is that when Quigley died with this tremendous fortune, it did not go to his heirs. Where it went was to create a secret society. And we know about that today because one of the...
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here.
Yes, all right.
Well, I guess this evening, Ed Griffin, we're talking about Cecil Rhodes, his fortune that was left to create a secret society. And, of course, here's a man who controlled the diamond mines and the gold mines of South Africa, certainly unparalleled wealth, you know, and certainly, and yet all this money went into creating a secret society with a very specific stated purpose. So you pick up the story, Ed, please.
Yes, and the question immediately comes to mind, well, if it's a secret society, how come you know about it? And it's a good question, and the answer is straightforward. It wasn't hard to find out if you knew where to look, but it certainly wasn't in the information path of the average person. If you knew where to look, you would have gone to the books written by Carol Quigley, the guy we were talking about a moment ago. Professor Carol Quigley was considered to be the historian of this secret society. He had followed it for most of his life. He was quite intimately familiar with the key players. He had been allowed to see the organization's private papers, and he was encouraged by this group to document what they had done over, well, since World War I, actually. And he wrote the book to chronicle their accomplishments and their methods of operation and so forth. And in these books, he says that he admires this group. It's pretty clear that he was not an inner core member himself, but he was on the edges of it and allowed to glimpse its secret operations in order to write the history of it. And he says in his books that he admires them. He had no objection to what they were trying to do, except for one thing, and that is that he felt that they shouldn't remain quite so secret. He felt that they should now come out in the open and boast about what they had been doing instead of remaining in the shadows. So Quigley is an important source for this information about the Cecil Rhodes will and where he left his money. Another source was William Stead, who was the administrator of Cecil Rhodes' will. And he wrote a book on it, and he described in his book what the wills were supposed to accomplish and that sort of thing. So if you know where to look, you go to the works of Carol Quigley and to William Stead, you can find out a tremendous amount about the secret society. Well, that's what I talked about before the group, and I pointed out to the audience that Quigley was important because he was a history professor at Georgetown University, and it was there that...
Hold that thought right, Ed. We'll be back just a
yes,
moment.
Oh, yes, all
right. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is G. Edward Griffin. We're going to be talking this evening about Professor Quigley, and Professor Quigley had written extensively about a secret society created by Cecil John Rhodes, and Cecil Rhodes, of course, really controlling the wealth of the diamond mines and the gold mines of South Africa. He has certainly the vast fortune he left, you would expect, would have transmitted to his heirs, but it didn't go there. It was to be put in a trust in perpetuity, in part for the Rhodes scholarships. But the vast, largest part of it was to go into the formation of a secret society whose goal was to bring all of the world under British domination. So you pick the story up there, Ed, please.
Yes, well, just before the cut-in there, Stan, when I was talking about Quigley himself, who was a history professor at Georgetown University, and it was there in the years 1964 and 1965 that our former president, William Clinton, studied. He was a student there in those years, and he studied under Quigley. They formed, apparently, a very close relationship, and Clinton got a tremendous amount of information from Quigley, and I'm sure that Quigley influenced Clinton's view of the world and of politics. And 27 years later, when William Clinton accepted the nomination for president at the Democrat convention, in his acceptance speech, he recognized and gave mention to Carol Quigley, his professor. It's a strange thing. Here it is 27 years later, and at that point, that highlight in his career, he went out of his way to mention and praise Carol Quigley as his mentor. And after he was elected president, in several speeches, he also mentioned Quigley again and gave him recognition for the impact he had on his formative years. Well, you know, many people thought that was a strange thing, But they thought there was nothing significant about it, except that Clinton was going out of his way to pay homage to a kindly professor who took him under his wing and so forth. But for those who knew who Quigley was, and those who had read his books and knew what his position was with the secret society, it had a whole different meaning. To the unwashed masses, everybody thought that Quigley was just making a nice gesture of recognition to his professor. But for those who knew, they recognized there was an embedded message there. Clinton was saying that he knew about the conspiracy, he approved of it, and he was now in its service. And so that's what the significance of Quigley was. And in the presentation, I talked about what Quigley said and how he described the conspiracy. I don't know whether we need to go into all of that now, except in a very shorthand version. What Quigley said, and also we drew passages from the works of others, such as William Stead, who was the administrator of the Rhodes Will, also passages from Cecil Rhodes himself, it emerged very clearly that what they created was a secret society that was formed to perpetuate the power and influence and the culture of the British Empire, to control the world from behind the scenes with the power secretly in the hands of the members of the secret society. Okay, it soon evolved after that to a slightly larger vision. Instead of having the British Empire as the center of this movement, they changed it to what they now call the New World Order. And it wasn't to be centered in England necessarily, although there would always be a very strong center of gravity there, but it was to be centered in the United Nations, and with another center of gravity in New York under the influence of the Rockefellers. And with the passage of time, it seems quite clear that the Rockefellers have emerged, and that center of gravity has become the primary one. And now the goal, instead of perpetuating this wonderful British Empire and the British culture, the goal now is to perpetuate what they call a new world order based on the model of collectivism, meaning it's a totalitarian system in which the government and the people in the government are in firm control over society, and that the individual citizens have very little freedom, if any, to do what they wish. And this control is always defended as being in the best interest of society, or being necessary for peace and tranquility and that sort of thing. It's always for, supposedly, for the good of the common man. Well, that was the general outline of the conspiracy, and that I talked about. But we came to a more interesting, well, I don't know that it's more interesting, but perhaps a more poignant aspect of it, which is, how do people in a secret society like this expect to rule the masses without the masses objecting to it, and without them rising up and saying, look, we don't want to be ruled, even if you say it's for our own good, we'll decide that? How do they do that? And we come to the answer which Quigley himself provides. And the answer is that you let the people think that they are participating in their own political destiny. You let them participate in political parties, usually two parties, and let them think that they have a choice between the two parties, when in reality both parties are firmly in the control of the secret society. And Quigley says that's how you do it. Let them throw the rascals out from time to time, bounce back and forth from one party to the next. Let them debate fiercely as though they really were making some kind of a choice, when in reality the issues that they debate and the issues that they are deciding are very inconsequential. That the overall issue, the growth of world government based on the model of collectivism, the development of the new world order, shall never be challenged by either party. And as long as that main program is advanced by both parties continually, Quigley says, then that's the way to do it. And that's what I was talking about. And, of course, maybe we should take a moment right now and just read that section.
All right, you go right ahead.
Yeah. This is what Quigley said. These are his words now. He said, the national parties and their presidential candidates, with the Eastern establishment assiduously fostering the process behind the scenes, moved closer together and nearly met in the center with almost identical candidates and platforms. Although the process was concealed as much as possible, by the revival of obsolescent or meaningless war cries and slogans, often going back to the Civil War. And he says, the argument that the two parties should represent opposed ideals and policies, one perhaps of the right and the other of the left, is a foolish idea, acceptable only to the doctrinaire and academic thinkers. Instead, the two parties should be almost identical so that the American people can throw the rascals out at any election without leading to any profound or extreme shifts in policy. Either party in office becomes, in time, corrupt, tired, unenterprising, and vigorless. Then it should be possible to replace it every 4 years, if necessary, by the other party, which will be none of these things, but will still pursue with new vigor approximately the same basic policies.
And I really think that is one of the most important, you know, quotations from the entire book, because it epitomizes the hypocrisy in this whole thing and how they toy with us common people. The whole idea that both political parties are the same, and we'll throw the rascals out every 4 years, we will feel we've accomplished something, but nothing changes.
Nothing changes in terms of the major policies. Everything else is window dressing. And the thing we have to realize, and this is so hard for Americans, it was hard for me to face. I have to tell you that, because I was raised, you know, thinking that our system was just about as great as it can be. And of course, it started out that way, but I hadn't realized it had been captured by these people. I call them the Rhodesians. I didn't realize what they had been doing to us. But so it's hard for people to accept the fact that their leaders are hypocrites and liars and deceivers. It's just very hard. What we're really dealing with are professional wrestlers. I mean, we've got the guy in the blue mask and the tight tight pants, and the guy with the bleached blonde hair and the white shirt and so forth. And they throw each other around the ring. They pounce on each other, and once in a while, one of them gets thrown out into the audience, and the crowd is filled with excitement and great roar. Oh, look at that! Look at this! Who's going to win? And it's all decided ahead of time. And so the guy in the red tights wins this time. And next week, it's the guy in the white tights that wins. And they're very content to play that game because it's how they make a living. It's their profession. We must realize that the professions in both, I mean, the politicians in both political parties are professional phony wrestling guys. And that's what it is. And until we wake up to that fact, we're not going to be able to break out of the grip of this Rhodesian scheme.
I really thought that was such a beautiful analogy. You know, the professional wrestlers, we know, of course, if anybody who has any knowledge at all realizes professional wrestling is simply, it's all play acting. I mean, if you've ever seen these guys afterwards, after gone behind the cloak, you know, into the dressing room, and you think after the way they were pounded and jumped on and stomped on and kicked, and you know, they just, and I remember going back to the stage and town where I lived with the team of a doctor for the wrestling team, and one guy had a little abrasion on the front of his lower leg, and he was groaning and moaning about that, and that's all he had. You'd think, of course, but it's all showbiz. It's great showbiz.
Yeah, and they do bang each other up once in a while, but it's not really for real, you know. The candidates will attack each other in the debates. They'll go on the campaign trail and insult each other and all that sort of thing, but they're all on the same team.
And I think we are seeing that, of course, epitomized in the recent Republican debates, back and forth. In fact, there's only one guy who doesn't know it's a fixed race, and that's Ron Paul, and he keeps talking about, you know, about ideas of principle and
real issues.
The real issues, and that's why they're suggesting the Republican National Committee was thinking throwing him off the debates because he dared to bring up real issues. We're going to be back in just a moment here with G. Edward Griffin talking about Carol Quigley's view of the two-party system. Well, Ed, pick up the story.
Well, that is the story. From there, you have to see, you hold up this formula, the Quigley formula, as a template. and you hold it up next to all of the major political events in America for the past, I would say, almost 100 years, and you can see how it meshes. I used a couple of examples the other day at the presentation because they were pretty easy to see. The first time I really became aware of the Quigley formula was during the Carter administration when the Congress voted to give away the Panama Canal. Well, everybody was against the giving away of the Panama Canal. The American public was overwhelmingly against that, and yet both parties voted to give it away. The leadership of both parties voted to do so, led on both sides of the aisle by members of the Council on Foreign Relations. Now, I skipped over that part earlier because I talked about the secret society, but I didn't tell your audience what happened to that secret society and what its form is today. So I better mention that now, because in the United States, the local branch of that is called the Council on Foreign Relations, or the CFR. That is an outer ring of the secret society. Cecil Rhodes set up an organization with rings within rings within rings. At the very center, there is a small group of people in total control, maybe three or four or five people, and then they create another ring organization of larger membership around that, and those people think that they are the total membership of the organization. In each country, that group is called the Round Table, and that's the name they gave to it. And then they said, we will set up around the outside of the Round Table, we'll set up front groups, and they called them that too, and those will have much larger membership, and those will reach out into the population. Those people will be given the responsibility of holding leadership positions in all the power centers of society. And in Great Britain and the other former dependencies, that's called the Royal Institute of International Affairs, is the name they chose, that front group. But in the United States, the same structure was given a different name. It was called the Council on Foreign Relations. Now, this all comes from Quigley, and as remember, he is the historian. He's the one with access to the private papers. Secret society, and he spells this all out in great detail in his works. So we come to the Council on Foreign Relations, which has a membership in the United States of about 4,000 people. But Stan, as you know, and as many of your listeners know also well, that even though this organization has only 4,000 members approximately, about 80% of the power centers of America, by that I mean the groups and the organizations that hold power and decide all of the political issues and the social issues and the economic issues of the nation, about 80% of those structures are in the hands of members of the Council on Foreign Relations. That means that we have a secret society ruling America. Those are the secret rulers of America. And we better wake up to that fact. This is not just a joke. This is not just some conspiracy theory. This is historical fact. And we're talking about these facts coming directly from the source themselves, from the people who are involved in that conspiracy. They talk about it. They boast about it now. They openly tell you what their plans are. And basically what they're saying is that, you can't do anything about it because we have the power and you have no choice. And that's just about the way it works. Now, in my presentation the other day, I read off a big list, as you remember, some of the organizations that were totally controlled.
Hold that thought for just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Ed was just saying here in the United States, this power center, which is an outgrowth of Cecil Rhodes Secret Society, of course, is known as the Council on Foreign Relations. It is simply a front for the group known as the Roundtable Group, which was simply a front for the Association of Helpers, and there's these various concentric rings around the power center, which originally was controlled by Cecil Rhodes and three of his associates. And each group thinks that they're at the ultimate level of the real controlling power, but each one is subservient to a smaller circle within. So, but Sidney Ed was talking about how the Council on Foreign Relations really controls almost all the centers of power here in the United States. Pick the story up there, Ed.
Well, yes. When you say that to people, they kind of give you a blank look and they say, what are you talking about? Well, what does that even mean, a power center? Well, power centers are those groups and organizations that people belong to and where they accept leadership. Human nature being such as it is that we all belong to groups and we follow leaders, whether they're organizational leaders or opinion leaders or corporate leaders or whatever. And that's a fact of life. And so the Rhodesians, as I call them, and by the way, a little aside is that they have deliberately chosen not to have a name. They refuse to have an official name because that makes it more difficult to talk about them. Quigley himself doesn't know what to call them. He calls them a structure in one place. He calls it a group in another place, or the Rhodes group in another place. I call them the Rhodesians, just so we have a name for them. But anyway, the Rhodesians, they operate now through these organizations, and in the United States, it's the Council on Foreign Relations. And so they're the ones that are running the show. So who are the members of the Council on Foreign Relations? I mentioned a few of them the other day. I'll take a moment here if you think it's appropriate, Stan, to go through some of them.
Go right ahead. I think that it's so important people realize how all-encompassing this is.
Yeah, so they look at the people, look and say, who are you talking about? We're these secret rulers of America who are controlled by a secret society. Well, here they are. I'm going to read some names of prominent people who are or were members of the Council on Foreign Relations. Let's start with the presidents of the United States. Herbert Hoover, Dwight Eisenhower, Richard Nixon, Gerald Ford, James Carter, George Bush Sr., and William Clinton. But remember, Clinton was also a Rhodes Scholar. John F. Kennedy once said that he was a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. He thought he was, but you can't find his name anywhere on the published list, so there's some confusion there. Of course, if former presidential candidate John Kerry had been elected in the election, he would have been added to the list because he's a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. And if anything should happen to President Bush and Vice President Richard Cheney should become president, then we'd have another member of the Council on Foreign Relations there, because he's a member. Now, the secretaries of state are even more important to this group than the presidents, because the presidents are kind of front-runner guys, and they always follow the advice of their advisors and the people they've put in their cabinets around them. And so let's take a look at secretaries of state. Members of the Council on Foreign Relations have been Dean Rusk, Robert Lansing, Frank Kellogg, Henry Stimson, Cordell Hull, E.R. Stettinius, George Marshall, Dean Acheson, John Foster Dulles, Christian Herter, Dean Rusk, William Rogers, Henry Kissinger, Cyrus Vance, Edmund Muskie, Alexander Haig, George Shultz, James Baker, Lawrence Eagleburger, Warren Christopher, William Richardson, Madeleine Albright, Colin Powell, and Condoleezza Rice. Now, that's just about
everybody. That's just about every Secretary of State, but it could be one or two, going all the way back to Cordell Hull.
Right. And then you go to Secretaries of Defense. We have James Forrestal, George Marshall, Charles Wilson, Neil McElroy, Robert McNamara, Melvin Laird, Elliot Richardson, James Schlesinger, Harold Brown, Caspar Weinberger, Frank Carlucci, Richard Cheney, Les Aspin, William Perry, William Cohen, and Donald Rumsfeld. Members of the directors of the CIA, pretty important spot. Members of the Council on Foreign Relations were Walter Smith, William Colby, Richard Helms, Alan Dulles, John McCone, James Schlesinger, George Bush Sr., Stansfield Turner, William Casey, William Webster, Robert Gates, James Woolsey, John Deutsch, William Studeman, George Tenet, Porter Goss, and Michael Hayden.
And that was just about every. What about the latest one, Gates? Isn't he?
I haven't checked him out. I have a feeling he's not a member, but I'd have to check that.
All right. Okay. We'll be back in just a moment here with G. Edward Griffin talking about the influence of the Council on Foreign Relations. They are really in charge of just about everything in this country today. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is G. Edward Griffin, and we're talking about the stranglehold that the Council on Foreign Relations has on the positions of power and successive administrations, whether they be Democrat or Republican. Pick up the story there, please.
Yes, well, we mentioned the, you know, the presidents, the secretaries of defense, secretaries of state, CIA directors. I've got a big long list here, Stan, of the corporations. It's too long to read, but I can just say, looking at the list, you know, we've got Atlantic Richfield, AT&T, Exxon, Ford Motor, General Motor, you know, all these, Texaco, all these companies. Let me just say, if you've ever heard of the company, it's controlled by the Council on Foreign Relations. So let's swing to the shorter lists. In the media, we find that CFR members are in management and operational positions at the Army Times, the Associated Press, Association of American Publishers, Barron's, Boston Globe, Business Week, Christian Science Monitor, Dallas Morning News, Detroit Free Press, Detroit News, USA Today, Wall Street Journal, Los Angeles Times, New York Post, San Diego Union Tribune, Times Mirror, Random House, W.W. Norton & Company, Warner Books, American Spectator, Atlantic Harper's, Farm Journal, Financial World, Insight, Washington Times, Medical Tribune, National Geographic, National Review, New Republic, New Yorker, Newsday, Newsmax, Newsweek, Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, Reader's Digest, Rolling Stone, Scientific American, Time Warner, Time, U.S. News & World Report, Washington Post, ABC, CBS, CNN, NBC, PBS, RCA, and the Walt Disney Company. Just think about that, Stan. This is the total method by which people get their information, and it's in the hands of people who are serving the Rhodesian secret society.
Amen to that. In fact, I was really a little stressed. I didn't realize, of course, they infiltrated Newsmax, but I shouldn't be at all surprised.
Yeah, it is. And then you go to these media personalities, you know, the talking heads.
Right.
You got David Brinkley, Tom Brokaw, William Buckley, Peter Jennings, Bill Moyers, Dan Rather, Diane Sawyer, Barbara Walters, Katie Couric, and Andrea Mitchell, who's the wife of Alan Greenspan, former chairman of the Federal Reserve System. And of course, Greenspan himself is a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. And then you go to labor unions. I won't read them, but they're firmly controlled. The tax-exempt foundations and think tanks. The number of CFR members in controlling positions is 443. In the universities, the number of CFR members who are or have been professors, department chairmen, presidents, or board members is 563.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here.
Yeah.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Ed is simply pointing out that the members of the Council on Foreign Relations dominate all the key positions in the executive branch of government, from the CIA to the State Department. And then, of course, then you get into the media. They control the media. They control our corporations. They control our universities. Their people are in key positions at every stratum of society. But before we go on, Ed, I mean, I would like you to get your website out and help people get in touch with you, and perhaps we'll have some time at the end of the program to talk about the organization you're working on. But right now, I just want you to be sure to get your website out and telephone number so people would know how to get the material from you and from American media.
Well, thanks, Dan. That's it's important to be able to see where I'm getting this information from and how I've put it out, because a lot of people will question the authenticity of this. They'll say, I don't believe that. I can assure you that when we make statements like we've been making, and when we publish materials, it's so thoroughly documented. It has to be, because we have to prove everything. If we were here telling the world that everything's all right, these people have our best interests in mind, and they're all wonderful people, we don't have to prove anything. Everyone wants to believe that, you see. But if you say that they belong to a front group, to a secret society, you jolly well better have your ducks in order to prove it. So all of our material is written very defensively in that fashion, and it has a lot of footnotes, and they're all original sources. We don't just quote ourselves as something we said last week. So if you want that kind of documentation, and that you want the broad view on many other topics as well, we have a commercial site. It's called The Reality Zone. And that's how we look at it. This is the reality. And you said in your introduction to the program, you know, the real world is not at all what we often think it is. Well, when you get to The Reality Zone, it's all real. And so remember the name, and the website is www.realityzone.com. And we have a lot. We have about 100 different books and videos and audio tapes there that I think you will find of great interest.
I'm sure you will. Okay, fine. So we've got the videos there, is there a telephone number if they do not have access?
Oh, let's see if I can remember it. I think it's 800 number 5. Stand by. I'll get it for you in a minute. Maybe I don't call it very often myself. So at the next break, I'll get that.
All right, fine. Well, yeah. Anyway, then why don't you just go ahead and continue with your discussion of the impact that these organizations are having and our outlook on our reality, and really, of course, making mockery of the electoral process, because they control both the Democrat and the Republican Party, the right, the left, the conservative, the liberal, and we go to the polls every 4 years to vote for the candidate of their choice.
Yes, that's the secret. That's the trick they've been using so successfully. And we must remember that this group is only 4,000 people, and there are a lot of churches in our hometown that have that many members and maybe more. And wouldn't it be startling to find out that if 80% of the power centers of America that I've been mentioning here were firmly in the hands of members of that one church, I think it would just blow everybody's minds. How can this be? And what's going on? But first you'd have to know about it. And that would not be easy if the channels by which you were to learn about it, the channels of your information, were controlled by those same people. So that's the kind of dilemma that we're up against. Now, this is not the inner core that we're talking about. The Council on Foreign Relations is not a secret society. It's not the inner core at all. It's at least two rings out. And most of the people in it have no idea, I'm sure, that they are controlled by an inner group, and those, in turn, are controlled by another inner group, smaller yet. They have no idea what the grand purpose of the whole movement is. I think most of those people are basically just opportunists, and they view the Council on Foreign Relations more or less as a high-powered employment agency, because they know that if once they've been invited to join, and you have to be invited, and they get on that list, you never have to worry about a job again. I mean, these people are always sought after to fill the highest positions in the corporate world and in government and in educational institutions and in banking and so forth. They're always sought after because they know that they wouldn't be on the list unless they had the correct attitude toward the ultimate goal of the secret society. The ultimate goal, I need to remind again and again, is the creation of a new world order, a global government, based on the model of collectivism. That is the goal. And as long as their attitude is friendly to that, if they think that that's a good thing for the world, then they might be invited if they also have enough intelligence and enough drive and enough charisma and other qualities that they feel are necessary. And yet, these people, even though they do not know that they're being controlled from an inner source, they do control the major power centers of society, and they are driving the nation into world government based on the model of collectivism. Now, you mentioned a very important thing there, Stan, when you said both parties are represented, and this is what we were really talking about earlier, this bipartisan game, this phony wrestling match of Republicans versus Democrats is nothing but that. It is a game. It's a distraction to keep the American people contented with the illusion that they are somehow participating in their own political destiny, that somehow their vote really is counting. If they can just choose between Republicans or Democrats, if they make the right choice this time in this election, well, then everything's going to be okay, or at least it's going to be better. But this is, when you look at the membership of the Council on Foreign Relations, you find out that both parties are about equally represented, and they don't look at partisan politics as a serious thing. It's just for the dummies out there to get all excited over it. The next thing we need to know that they are elitists. They intend to rule for our own good. They're serious about this. This is not just an intellectual exercise with them. They intend to rule the world. And they think that everything that promotes that is moral. To them, this is kind of a warfare against the world. They have to conquer the world because the world is resisting their good judgment. And they carry the morality of war. You know, in times of war, there is only one immoral act, and that is to lose. That's the kind of morality that these people have. They will do anything, anything, to accomplish their goal. So that's the next thing we must know about them. And then the third thing is that the method by which they intend to rule and to perpetuate their control is called democracy. Now, they love that word, democracy, because it just warms everybody's heart. You know, we're fighting for democracy and all of that sort of thing. Well, to them, democracy is a ploy. They know that if they can get everybody focused on the fact that they have a vote, and they think that the vote should determine everything, if you can just get the majority to agree to something, that's democracy. If that's the level of political awareness of the average voter, that's just fine with them, because they control the vote. You know, they will allow people to vote so long as they can't vote for anything important. And if they think that that's democracy in action, then everybody's happy. And no matter what happens to the world or to their nation, they say, well, we voted. I guess we voted it in ourselves, so we have no one to blame but ourselves.
In fact, I often think of that, the picture we have implanted in our mind of democracy in Iraq, and this woman with a black shawl over her head holding up an ink finger, you know, a finger that was stained with purple ink. She had voted, and that was a symbol of a democracy. But what did they vote for? Did they know what they voted for? Did they know what the Constitution? I mean, were they voting for the best candidate? Were they voting because she was either a Sunni or a Shia, voting for the Sunni or Shia candidates? But
yeah, did she have any control over who she was voting for? No, none whatsoever. Just like the average person in America has zero control over who they're voting for. You mentioned earlier the unfolding of this drama with Ron Paul, Congressman Ron Paul, running on the Republican ticket. Why, that's the first time that I can remember that anybody with a real principled message has been allowed to even be seen by the average American in these debates. And, of course, that's not according to the rule. The Republicans are all supposed to be in agreement with each other. All the candidates are supposed to basically say pretty much the same thing so that the voters can decide on which one they like with the nicest smile or the most sincere expression or the better commander of words in a debate, how sharp they are, but never, never consider principle. Say, well, now Ron Paul is breaking the rules there, and he's actually talking about principle. And it's funny to see the Republican leadership just coming unglued, trying to figure out how to get rid of this guy. And anyway, Ron Paul is certainly breaking the rules on this Quigley formula, and boy, I sure hope that they don't get rid of him.
Well, it's going to be very interesting to see how this develops. But, I mean, Ron Paul has been willing to talk about, you know, getting back to constitutional government. Why, nobody else talks about constitutional government. It talks about getting out of Iraq and Afghanistan, and there's nobody else wants to do that. Every other candidate wants to go right along with it. In fact, to my knowledge, he's the only one who objects to torture. How can the Republicans profess to be moral Christian people and still support a regime that supports torture?
It's because their leaders do. You see, that's what I was talking about before. One of the elements of human nature is that we follow our leaders. And whatever our leaders do, they can go pretty far out from our personal beliefs before we throw them out, especially if the leaders are deceptive. Because what they'll do is they'll say what we want them to hear. They'll speak in terms of the values that we hold, and we'll say, oh, yeah, that's wonderful, that's my man. But then when they're elected to office, they violate those statements. In other words, they lie. Remember, their morality is the morality of war, where the only immoral act is to lose. And so it's not immoral in their minds to lie. Whatever it takes to be elected, whatever it takes to keep the people under control, that's moral. So once we understand that they are in this Council on Foreign Relations or under its influence, we cannot expect anything from them except that kind of activity.
Well, what a tragedy, what a tragic situation we face today. You know, when you tell the average individual about the Council on Foreign Relations and their grip on all the centers of power, people's eyes glass over and they sort of nod as if to say, well, you know, obviously this guy's got to be a little deft. nothing could be like that, you know, if it were, why Rush Limbaugh would have told us long ago.
Well, you see, Rush is part of that. He's the cheerleader for the phony wrestlers.
Amen to that.
And he's not the only one, of course. I mean, we've got him on both sides of the aisle. We've got organizations in the Democratic camp who are very good at exposing the corruption and the wrongdoing within they were in the Democratic camp exposing the Republicans. They do a good job of that. And then we've got Republicans who do a good job of exposing the Democrats for the same reason, but they never are bipartisan about it. And that should tell us right away. They're trying to keep our choices limited. We either got to go for the Republicans or the Democrats. So take your choice. It doesn't make any difference.
Amen to that. Well, I think that it's so vitally important that people understand how we've been hoodwinked for so many years. Well, we're sort of getting down towards the end of the program. And I thought perhaps you'd like to tell our listeners about what you're trying to do, about the organization you're trying to put together to counter these groups of people who control the centers of power.
Yes, thanks, Dan, because you do come eventually to that all-important question, what are you going to do about it? And it's tempting to say, well, it's gone too far, there's nothing we can do, they hold all the power, they control the media, they control the government, they control the schools, they control the police, they control the army, and you can just go on down the list. And people will look at you and they say, do you really think that you're going to take power away from these people? And my answer is yes. And I'm going to do it, not me, but the organization which we've created called Freedom Force International. We are going to do it basically in the same manner in which they have acquired control. In other words, these people did not try and convert the American voters one-on-one to endorse the New World Order based on the model of collectivism. No. They sent their people who had that goal in mind, they sent them into the power centers of society, those groups and organizations to which the public belongs, and the instructions were, and the mission was, to get to the tops of those organizations and to be influential in them and to control them. It took them a long time to do it, but they succeeded, and once they succeeded, they were able to lead the nation. Well, we're a little bit late in getting started, but it's better late than never, I say. So our plan is to train our people, to encourage our people to do the same thing only in reverse, to go back into the power centers of society and to start to influence them in the direction of freedom and liberty and constitutional restrictions on government. It's not going to be easy, but I can tell you one thing, it's not going to be done on the battlefield. It's not going to be done through revolution and blood in the streets, because the power, the military power, is all in the hands of these people. We have to do it through the power centers of society. And that's where Freedom Force International is working today. We now have members in 40 countries, Stan. This problem exists around the world. And you'd be surprised at the strong support and understanding we're getting from around the world. But, of course, our primary focus is right here in the United States. And we have members in all of the states, and we're growing, we're creating chapters. And if anybody's interested in learning about this and wanting to become a part of it, become a change agent, not just complaining about what's going on, but actually to do something about it, I invite them to come to our website. And this is pretty easy to remember also. It's Freedom Force International. This is international, so it's freedomforceinternational.org. Org stands for organization. So be prepared to spend some time there, and I think you'd be very pleased with what you see. And the short answer to the question, do we really expect to recapture control of our country? The answer is yes, and Freedom Force is how we're going to do it.
And of course, I congratulate you for putting together a plan, and I think you're absolutely right. I mean, certainly open rebellion would never be successful. What we have to do is defeat a bad idea with a better idea. And I will put freedom up against collectivism. I would put up individualism against this tyrannical regime these people want any time. The vast majority of the American people want to be free. The vast majority of the American people do not want a collectivist society. It is only the elitists who feel it is the white man's burden. It is their burden, noblesse oblige, We need the ruling aristocracy to look after you common people, because you really can't look after yourselves, and we know it's better for you. And I think that Ed's program is just what the American people need. If you listen to our programs this evening, we did not have one caller who wanted to leave our troops over there in Iraq and Afghanistan, and I was proud of each one of the callers. I hope I didn't offend anybody by of course suppressing them to justify their position. But sometimes this is the best way to get people to think and understand that my arguments were sophisticated. I mean, when you've got a losing hand, you fold. And we've got a losing hand in the Middle East. We fold our hand, we come home, and then, of course, we begin to identify who it was who dealt us that losing hand. We'll be right back with Ed Griffin. Well, Ed, you've got 3 minutes to, of course, wrap up the program. Was there any other address you wanted to put out? Or?
I thought that was my clue 3 minutes ago. I did wrap it up.
Oh, right.
But I guess I can repeat it, because it all bears repeating, Stan. I take just a little breath with it right now. You know, there's a tendency for us to think that if we just know about a problem, that is going to take care of it. I've spent most of my life, you know, you and I go way, way, way back to the 1960s, and we've seen so many people become informed. They read all the books, but nothing has changed, and they were terribly ineffective, as we were, as I was, because we never got this vision of coming to power. We always thought that somehow if we just had enough books on our shelf, and if we just really understood what these guys are trying to do, that somehow that would translate into some kind of a corrective action. Well, it doesn't work that way. Power is necessary. Our enemies have known that they had to have control of the power centers of society. And they didn't necessarily have to have the approval of the voters. If they had the power, it didn't make any difference. Well, and we looked at that askance, and isn't that terrible? These people are reaching for power. Why, power is the problem, we said. And it turns out that that's wrong. Power is not the problem. It's the problem of who holds the power and what they do with it. Now, power is dangerous. There's no question about it. It's a lot like guns, Stan. You know, guns are dangerous. I mean, people get killed with guns. You know, guns in the house are dangerous. But the only thing more dangerous is not having them. Well, political power is exactly the same way. People can be corrupted by power, and we have to do everything we can to make sure that when we acquire that power, that we ourselves and our descendants cannot be corrupted by it. And there are ways to do that, and we've spent a lot of time with that on Freedom Force. You'll read about it when you come to our website. But nevertheless, we must have that power, or we'll never be able to succeed, because no dictatorship, no tyranny of history has ever been overthrown except by forces that had equal or greater power than their own. So that was the missing link, I think, in the what we used to call the Patriot Movement or the Conservative Movement or the American Movement. We always were focused on getting more information. We wanted to have more books and go to more seminars and see more documentary films and write more letters to the congressmen and all that sort of thing. We ourselves never thought of acquiring power. We have a little slogan in Freedom Force which kind of summarizes it. We say, you cannot fight City Hall, but you can be City Hall. And that is the secret to our ultimate success. We must become influential in the power centers of society, and it can be done.
God bless. Thanks so much, Ed. Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you, and goodbye.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Ed Griffin this evening, and I hope you'll heed what he has to say. I've known Ed for, about 45 years. Let's see, we first met in 1962, so this would be 45 years. And I've always known him to be a man of integrity, and I felt privileged to know him and to consider him a friend. So, you know, certainly get in touch with Ed, understand. We're involved in a battle, and you're going to have to take a stand someplace. This is the place to take a stand, because, of course, there's nothing so powerful as an idea whose time has come. Well, of course, this is also the time when I have to remind you that my ministry of Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported. We're dependent upon those of you who listen to our programs to help us as we reach out 5 hours every single day. By shortwave, by internet, by satellite, by radio. And we're on radio someplace in America 5 hours a day. And we have a growing audience. We have more and more people who are learning and understanding. And then we can direct them to people like Ed and others who have a program. And, of course, we have to get people to understand what we're up against. But, of course, my feeling as well is that there are powerful spiritual forces that energize those people within the Council on Foreign Relations whose stated goal, if you read Professor Quigley carefully, is to bring the kingdom of God to earth. To bring the kingdom of God to earth. What are they talking about? And that, of course, is what everybody's missed. To bring the kingdom of God to earth. Well, I don't think we're ever going to bring, we are not going to bring the kingdom of God. And so what God are they talking about? Well, our telephone number, of course, is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Let me suggest my talk on the Forbidden Secret, our new 4-tape set. It is called The Secret Behind the Secret. Now, the Forbidden Secret is available in both VHS and in video one of these days. Of course, we hope to have it in book form, but we do have an excellent syllabus that goes along with this, and so you'll certainly want to get either the DVD or the VHS and the syllabus, and then, of course, you'll want to get the 4-tape or 4-CD set, The Secret Behind the Secret. You want to get, of course, the Constance Cumby, and we have Constance Cumby either in a VHS or in a DVD. Talking about the emergence, her experience in the New Age. We have Chris Pinto available now in video of talking about America and the New Atlantis, or I think it's titled The Atlantis Connection. And you must understand that the occultists believe that lost Atlantis was real, that it was a great and powerful society once ruled the world. And they want America to become the new Atlantis. You'll be fascinated by Chris's approach to this, and it's available from Radio Liberty. The VHS is available now, and, of course, the DVD will be available in a week or so. So if you want to get these things, remember our number, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. We do hope many of you will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters. We hope that maybe you'll want to get the Berkey filters. Certainly we recommend them. And I think we're moving into difficult times. You need a good source of water so that you can filter it. If you need the other things, we have an excellent book, Making the Best of Basics, but we do have a food catalog we can get you a copy of. We have health products. And you should have a good supply of those laid in. You need to begin making preparations for the very difficult times that lie ahead. And hope and pray that I'm wrong, that we're not going to war with Iran. And I hope and pray I am wrong, but everything I see points me in that direction. So pray for America. Pray for revival. Please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. Until tomorrow, may the Lord be with you.
You're tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.